Welcome to a new episode of the India Independent Films Podcast. This is Rahul Desai here. We are finally back, all three of us in the same room, technically. As I said, Rahul Desai, film companion. We have Ishita Sen Gupta again, OTT Play critic, and we have Uday Bhatia back, Mint critic. We three of us are going to be discussing two Hindi films from last week, both of them biopics. Very eventful week last week, so lots to discuss. Before we get into these two very different kinds of biopics, just a slight plug, because Uday did a very detailed and well-researched piece on Hindi cinema in the run-up to the elections this year. It's called Bollywood Votes. It's a long-form piece. It came out, I think, on Sunday last week. So for those of you who haven't read it, do go onto his Twitter profile and read it. I really enjoyed reading the piece. So so we are done with that plug. And since we've said something good about Uday, nothing absolutely not related to film. This is also the week in which Uday's beloved football team did not win the league title after 11 seasons. So it's the first time Bayern Munich did not win the Bundesliga.
It may also be the week that your beloved football team threw away their chance to win the league. So.
Absolutely unnecessary on a film podcast to be speaking about the English Premier League. But
completely unnecessary. Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, good balance of things. So it's been
a good segue also, because we're going to talk about a football movie first. So
I'd like to say I thought that through, but I did not. So that's a good little segue into the first film that we're going to be discussing this week. We go from Bayern Munich to Maidan, directed by Amit Sharma, who you would know, who made Badai Ho, the first film. He also made a couple of other films, which we'll get to later. But Maidan is a biopic. It has Ajay Devgan as football coach Syed Abdul Rahim, who is probably the most famous football coach that India has ever produced. The film follows his journey for a decade or so, from 1952 to 1962, his experiences with the football team, and as well as his struggles with the bureaucracy, and with he had a very event, like I think the last couple of years was very difficult for him health wise. He had lung cancer, so the film also covers that. The Indian football team, believe it or not, was a Asian powerhouse back in the 1950s. We know them mostly because in the 1952 Olympics, they played barefoot, and in the Helsinki Olympics, that is one of the most iconic moments of football. Interestingly enough, the film starts with that particular match, and it very interestingly takes that as a starting point and goes through the next decade, and Syed Abdul Rahim's basically his genius and his propelling of the Indian football team to the top of the Asian crop. They won the Asian Games under him. That's where the film ends. And they also went to a couple of Olympics under him. So, that's a nutshell of the film. As I said, it stars Ajay Devgan. Priyamani plays his wife. There's Gajraj Rao in the film. There's Rudranil Ghosh. These are technically the villainous characters. They mostly play Bengalis, which Ishita will have a lot to say about, which we'll come to. But that's about it in terms of what the film is about. Let's move on to Ishita, since we just spoke about the very Bengali-heavy film, and most of it is based in Calcutta, because that's where the Indian Football Federation is based in the 1950s, and there are a lot of characters in that particular setting.
Yes, Rahul, what?
Were you happy that there was so much Bengali representation for one in the film, like authentic Bengali representation?
No, first of all, it was not authentic, and there was lots of propaganda, I want to say, against Bengalis. Like the film reduced these people, like the Federation people were just like chilling and having shingara and just like bitching about like the Ajay Devgan, like the, you know, the character. And I mean, I refuse to believe that even though we are like lazy and we are laid back, I refuse to believe this is what we do in the spare time. So
are you absolutely sure about that, though? Like,
I'm very sure about that.
Okay. So that characterization. But no, coming to the film itself, apart from the very bad Bengali stereotypes, what did both of you think, first of all, think of the film? I have a lot of opinions since it's another sports biopic that did not do justice to the subject. But let's start with you, Ishita.
Yeah, so I did not enjoy it much. I think also it was just like, it was too long for like Hindi film, because I think now most Hindi films have started becoming too long. So it was too long, and it was also milking every like melodramatic trope that there ever was in a sports film outline. I feel like it's just that if someone is unwell, then that person has to cough till he dies. Like if someone hates you, then that person has to like hate you till hate becomes a very, very strong. Like there's no dislike, there are no middle grounds in Maidan. Like no one is like an okay person. Either everyone is like a hero or they are like a villain. And so I think this was like, obviously these were like my larger problems, but also I mean, if we want to talk about Ajay Devgan later, then I will reserve my opinion for that. So I mean, broadly speaking, I felt like it was just playing too much into binaries to have like to make an impact. So yeah, Uday, what are your views on it?
So first of all, this is quite a delayed film, right? If I'm not mistaken, it was done somewhere around 2019-20, and it was supposed to release like quite a while back, and then it got delayed. You can figure why it didn't get maybe released during the pandemic, because there's a lot of coughing, which we'll
Wow. Nice.
I mean, it's very ominous coughing. Like the first time he coughed, I'm like,
oh man, that coughing fit was just the worst.
I was like, oh, that's a bad cough. That's not good. That has to be significant.
That's as committed as I've seen Ajay Devgan to anything in a while.
And it's so cruel, because Ajay Devgan, if there's one thing that he's retained, and he's lost a lot through his acting career in terms of, in terms of screen presence, I think I feel that. But he still looks very cool when he's smoking. And he does that a lot in this film. And there are, consequences. I guess we'll come to that in a little bit. But so a bit of a delayed sports biopic, and you can kind of maybe tell that it's been through a lot of iterations by the fact that there are like some 7 or 8 people spread across the writing credits, story, dialogue, screenplay. They're like a whole bunch of names. And it sort of you see the incoherence of the the way it's written, and just obviously like a lot of Bengali caricatures, but then everything is kind of a caricature. Even like the all the sports films cliches are there, but none of them feel very fresh. You know they've all been done, and they've been done better in so many other films. And it's 3 hours long, so it really becomes quite a slog. It wasn't long into the film that I started looking at my watch, and I was like, oh God, I don't think I'm going to be at all interested by the end of this.
Yeah, like 181 minutes is a very long time for any kind of Hindi film, leave alone a sports biopic. And I mean, a lot of the problems with the sports biopics or any kind of biopics lately is it's very very Wikipedia handling of what happens between 52 and 62, which we were fairly aware of if you go through the page of, he's an unsung hero. He's not mentioned as much as other maybe Indian sports celebrities over the years. So it's a very interesting subject in that way. And it also talks about a sport that was technically very regional. That's what we see in the film. There's a fight for dominance between Bengal and Hyderabad in the film. And of course, Shahid Abdul Rahim represented Hyderabad. He's a coach from Hyderabad. He's a very celebrated sort of Muslim coach. And he is very well respected amongst his peers. He probably had a career of his own. Of course, the entire bureaucracy is in Bengal itself, and this is post-independence India, so you get the regional tensions, you get all of that. So there's, I get that there's a lot on the plate, but as Ishita mentioned, you know, the film is very happy to deal in binaries. And it isn't, it doesn't trust the fact that there are enough obstacles on their own between, say, in that 10 years that we are talking about in his life. The fact that I just mentioned that, you know, there are so many cultural things at play, and the fact that we are already talking about an Indian football team, which on its own is an underdog concept. And, you know, you're basically recruiting players from across the country, untested players, young players. We've seen that in Chakde, you know, and so you already have all those factors coming in, and you have like different kinds of players in the dressing room. But then it feels like the film never trusted, the fact that there were enough sort of challenges to overcome naturally. You have like a coach like that, you have a team like that, and you know, you have his health deteriorating towards the end of his stint. Then he gets fired. He has to go on this, you know, very depressive sort of phase, and then come back. And so there's a lot happening, and you always feel like the film is trying to overcompensate for a lack of drama, which is untrue, because there's enough drama on its own. And that's what Chakde did so well, because it just trusted in the coach's redemption arc. And the fact that it was a women's hockey team we were talking about, and the fact that, you know, nobody expected them to win. It's more or less the same thing here. You're talking about no-hopers in a no-hoper sport, because India has never been associated with football after those 10 years, after he after he basically passed. And that was the biggest problem with the film. You know, it had to like play up so many things, including his lung cancer, the coughing we are talking about, which they really went all out with, especially towards the climax, last 10 or 15 minutes, which I thought was very, like, I thought the games themselves were well shot, like at least the climax, the final, the we are talking about the Asian Games in 1962, I thought they were very well shot, and you had so many things going for you. I don't understand why they had to play up so many other factors, including the villains, so to say. I mean, you didn't need actual human villains. You had Gajraj Rao playing this sports journalist who just wants to take down the Indian team at any cost. You had Rudranil Ghosh as his, more or less his minion, who's the head of the Football Federation. It just, all of them were cartoon villains. You just didn't really need any of it.
I mean, you mentioned Chakde. I would go much below Chakde and say that Gold, which was the hockey film, I would much prefer that to Maidan, in the sense that I think it has pretty much the same aims and a lot of the same methods as this, but I think it's quite, you know, quite a lot more successful. I think it just like trusts its material a little bit more, sort of just post-independence story, and it just does it a little better. The acting's better. Everything, you know, leading to the games are this thing. And as you mentioned, the games in Maidan, the actual matches are, they're not bad. I mean, they're pretty well. I thought the last one was really good.
Yeah.
And they have a separate cinematographer and editor credited for those, which was amusing. I don't know if that's something that's done a lot. But for this, they did have that. But everything between the matches is excruciating. Either, you know, Devgan's home life, Rahim's, like, you know, stuff, you know, at home, he's sort of kindly neglecting his wife and kid, who's also a footballer and who's also on the team, national team. And those parts are really dull. And the ones in the politics, which is happening in the Calcutta Federation and at the national level, is just excruciating. That's like really, really difficult to watch. And Gajraj Rao is, as you know, as Rahul was saying, is just playing like a cartoon villain, and it's very difficult to watch. I mean, Bahrul Islam is trying to, he tries to, like, the same function that he was doing in the Vishal Bhardwaj series, whose name I've forgotten, which he's trying to class things up, but it's just too difficult because everything around him is really bad.
Ishita, what did you think about, first of all, Ajay Devgan, and secondly, the fact that the film got fairly good reviews and it's doing pretty well at the box, and a lot of people seem to have liked this since it's a sports biopic, after law, and plus when it comes to these unsung heroes, unsung stories, people tend to look at the subject more than the film. So what do you think about this particular sort of reaction to the film, as well as Ajay Devgan's very very long performance?
Did you just say long performance about a man who died young?
Yeah, it just felt like he lived really long. But yeah, okay.
So I'm a little baffled, but I was also a little baffled when the film was playing out, the screening, and people were clapping. But I feel like it's probably like a sports film is easier to like or easier to be invested in. I mean, that's my reading of it. And it's a decent, like as Uday said, and even I remember you also said that, and I also agree that the match, the bits where in Maidan, where the, you know, the matches take place, I feel it's a fairly watchable film, especially the last bit. It's just in between, the stretches are like just terrible. And they're like, it's just not just, you know, the villains who are like caricatures. I mean, Gajraj Rao is supposed to be like a Bengali journalist who literally has this line where he says democracy is overrated, which, I mean, like there will be riots in Bengal. But other than that, I feel like there's also this, like, I just felt like the film took too many shorthands. Like, for instance, I just could not wrap my head around the fact that if the characters of Gajraj Rao and Rudrani, they have a problem with this person because they accuse him of favoring or preferring Hyderabad to Calcutta, then I just could not wrap my head around the fact that the film made no insinuation about, you know, Abdul Rahim being Muslim. Because it was just like, you know, like a decade since independence, when all the proceedings were happening, partition had happened. And the fact that the film remains completely quiet about, or there are no jibes, you know, at him regarding his religion, seemed to me very implausible. Like, I don't think I could not buy it with the characters the way they had depicted. Also, I feel like... Ajay Devgan, yeah, like I agree with Uday actually. He is one of the few actors who look good when they smoke, and he knows that. I feel like even when he's smoking, you know, he's very aware of the fact that, you know, that he brings a certain whatever, like a panache to the idea. And even in all his last few films, I remember him smoking only. But yeah, I feel like he just plays like Ajay Devgan plays it, like he's always too much, and with that I mean he's just not doing anything. Like he's either like too straight or too smug for this character. Like I just never felt there was like an underdog story, because he was absolutely fine till he started coughing. He was just not reacting to anything. Like they are like, we will not let you do, and he was looking at this person and the person is like, okay, fine, you know, whatever you say. And the next moment after he starts coughing, things go like train wreck. So yeah, I don't think Ajay Devgan was like the correct actor to play. Also because I found I don't know if it's correct, but I just don't I couldn't think of him to be a very athletic person, because he hardly also does anything with the football. You know, he's only smoking, or he's on the corners like just gesticulating with his hands and telling them what to do, and surprisingly they win after that. So not only does the film take us into the mind of the character or the, you know, the protagonist who they want to showcase, but I also feel like there's so much of opaqueness was brought with Ajay Devgan, who is just, there's so much, like he just lends a very superheroism to a character without making a hero out of him.
He was like either too stoic or too sullen, you know, like that's the problem with Ajay Devgan most films, in the films that do well. I think he was in Shaitan recently, and
yeah,
in Rishi 2. I think you can't tell any of his characters, like when he plays the father in All These Families, or the husband and the father of All These Families, and when he plays a football coach, you really can't tell the difference in the way he's sullen all the time. There's no real panache or sense of humor to the way he plays them. He's obviously enjoyed a lot of critical acclaim for these dramatic roles he's played earlier in his career, be it Bhansali or Zakam or, you know, any of those roles. And I guess that because of that, he's really become this very studied actor when it comes to dramatic roles. Like, I'm not even talking about the patriotic roles. It's just like playing regular everyday characters. And because of that, it's like he's very aware of what he needs to do to sound a certain way. His voice modulation is very elaborate. The way he reacts to things as well. And of course, he didn't, forget physically, he just didn't feel the role of a football coach, especially a maverick football coach who's supposed to be this genius who single-handedly takes Indian football to heights we've never seen before. We don't really see why. Like, forget that.
That was a huge thing, actually, right? Because in the games, he's as much, he's just there to, like, he just reflects whatever's happening in the thing. There's only one game which is happening at a, I think at a state level or something, or at a club level, where he makes an adjustment because the Calcutta players is doing very well. Chunni Goswami is doing very well. So he figures out how to kind of take care of him, and his team wins. And that's the only time, I think, where we see like a solid intervention from him during the game in the film. And otherwise, he's quite passive. If his team is losing, they just lose. If it's winning, they just win. But he doesn't seem to influence that much. And that probably would not be the case if, you know, given the kind of, you know, very long-serving and successful coach that Raheem was. Devgan, again, I agree with you. I just think he's become a not very interesting actor now. His action phase, I think, just kind of took a lot of the nuance out of his acting. And it's a very safe but boring kind of thing that he's left with. Did you recognize the person playing PK Banerjee as Slow Cheetah?
Ishita did.
So I did it, and while the film was on, I looked at Rahul and I'm like, Slow Cheetah is slow no more. And Rahul didn't laugh. So I'm like, are you not getting who this guy is? And then he's like, oh, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I asked towards the end of the film, I was like, I've seen him before. His face has a very recognizable shape. And then she was like, Slow Cheetah. I was like, yeah, of course, he has a real name.
Really wish I had figured this out during the film, because I think it would have increased my interest in it at least like maybe 10%, which is enough. Considering,
I mean, you have a guy called Slow Cheetah on a football field, so you have to be
His real name is not Slow Cheetah.
His real name is not Slow Cheetah, though.
His real name is Chaitanya Sharma.
Chaitanya Sharma, I thought he was quite good, actually.
Yeah, I thought he had
the maximum screen time, and he had the best physicality out of them to make.
Yeah,
absolutely. He's presented as this kind of electric, fast guy, did very determined, and he does really well, I thought, in that role. Chunni Goswami, Amartya Ray played Chunni Goswami again, I thought, did quite well. The footballers were all fairly good.
Yeah.
And I thought all those scenes were quite convincing. Thank God, because, you know, if it had, if those scenes hadn't worked, 3 hours of this would have been, it would have been too tough.
I think that's what it is. Because of those scenes working, the highs that I feel like the audiences with us went through were very high. Because we haven't really, first of all, seen enough football being played on screen in Indian films, and secondly, haven't looked at it this convincingly, especially when the camera, you know, becomes part of the field and the almost war movie photography going on, right, in the middle. So I thought they were very inventive with those sequences, which is why it makes sense that they had a separate team for that. And I think that's what they did smartly to, like, hook the audiences, because they knew they had nothing in between. Either they had nothing in between, or they played it up so much that they wanted it to reach the level of the football on the ground, because they were like, let's just keep everything at a high level. There shouldn't be like any human drama per se. So even the human drama felt like, you know, you're shooting penalties every second. But yeah, it's just, I was wondering what both of you made of the famous speech that he made in the locker room, the monologue that most coaches have before the final, and obviously a version of the Chakde 70 minute monologue here. I was wondering what you both made of it.
I don't even remember it.
It revolved around 8.
I have no memory of this.
He's like...
something ache, something the power of one.
He said that 1 is a very powerful number or something.
Yeah, it's so bad. I thought he was going to do the Game of Inches speech, because every film after any given Sunday, basically does that speech. But it wasn't really that, or if it was, it was a really, really bad attempt at that. I can barely remember it. But yeah, you're right. It revolved around one for some reason.
Yeah, very forgettable speech. Like, I don't even, like, how... I get it that your coach is more or less dying on the field, but, like, then don't have him speak, because that's... it was just, like, it felt like, you know, just get on with it, go to the second half quickly, and this... It just didn't feel like it was needed at all, like a lot of other things in the film. But yeah, I guess, is there anything else both of you would like to add about, like, about this film?
I just want to say that, just a small shout out to Vijay Maurya as the All India Radio. I thought it was a very, very inventive casting out of just, he was there. And it was just always very nice to see him. I feel like, you know, it's just, yeah, so just that.
That's, yeah, I just wish that we, you know, Hindi films learned how to do sports commentary better. Like, they didn't have to narrate the whole rules of the game as well as where India is in a particular, like, what football means. And, you know, they're just sitting school, the nursery kids down and explaining the game to them. But, yeah, Vijay Maurya was nice.
I thought, like, when it was happening in the film, you know, even I took it down as my note, like, you know, because they're obviously over-explaining. But I feel like probably at that time, because since radio was probably the predominant form of, you know, people could not see it. So maybe that is why they were over-explaining.
That's very kind of you. I'd like to think like that also.
Also a shout out to the Australian team, which we at the beginning,
beautiful.
Who are all dressed like Harry Potter. And their coach has the most amazing voice.
Yeah,
I would recommend going and seeing Maidan just to hear that guy speak for 2 minutes.
I felt like he was singing. Like, he was going to go on to, like, an opera sort of high-pitched sort of tone any moment. And it, of course, there was an Australian coach in Chak De also, was really funny. Looked like Shane Warne, but slightly older with a hat. But at least that Australian coach, like, we saw him on the field and... Yeah, it was so funny. You're right about the Australian coach. I think most of us mentioned him in the reviews also. And that's when you knew the film is going to go down in flames as far as the stereotypes are concerned, because the Asian games that were being played had one team after the other, where one stereotype after the other started coming, especially the Thailand coach, who was standing on the sidelines and just madly gesticulating, just absolutely aggressively looking as if someone is dying on the field rather than someone playing football. So it just felt like the reaction shots were always going to go down that route.
Yeah, almost racism at several points, but very equal opportunity, like right across the board.
There was shots of eyes, right? Like Ishita was saying. So I guess that's about it with Maidan. Of course, produced by Bonnie Kapoor, is still going on in theaters. So those of you interested in sports biopics and, you know, watching these films, go ahead and watch it. I also have to, like, before we move on to the next film, I think Ishita sent me a clip of Abhinav Bindra talking about his favorite sports films. Uday, you'd be interested to know one of the three films in that was Cool Runnings. So just like a shout out to...
man, I love him for that.
Already
a great man, but now we know he has good taste also. That's just a great choice.
Yeah, one of the ones was Whiplash for some reason, right? Like one of his three favorite films.
Well, that's a music film treated like a sports film. So
yeah, I found that interesting.
Very nuanced. It's always, so that's basically our plug for the sports biopic podcast me and Uday did a couple of years ago, which we went on and on for. I think we didn't stop talking for 10 hours. But any of you interested in that, use Maidan as a segue to that. But we are going to move on to our next film. Imtiaz Ali's next after a very long time, and been looking forward to discussing this film with both of you. Amar Singh Chamkila, streaming on Netflix, of course, stars Diljit Dosanjh as Amar Singh Chamkila. Uday, I'll give it to you now for just a few lines about the biopic before we get into it.
So it's fairly simple. It's not simple at all, actually, but it's straightforward to summarize. It's a biopic of this Punjabi singer called Amar Singh Chamkila, who was very big in the 80s. His style was a sort of rough folk music, very funny, very kind of risque lyrics, said a lot of things that other singers weren't saying through his music, wrote his own songs. And he was killed. He was shot along with his wife, Amar Jyot, in 1988 under very mysterious circumstances. And till date, the cause of his murder is a mystery. And the film, instead of trying to solve this mystery, kind of leans into it. And it opens with the murder, which a very Citizen Kane approach, I thought, that you start with the death of a famous person and then you sort of fracture into these various recollections of him by various people. So I think a very, very interesting start in itself. Like, I was so hooked by the end of the first 15 minutes or so. It was just like a great, great start. Mm.
Ishita, your feelings, first of all, about the way you process the film, because I know, when Ishita watched it the first time, I watched it the second, because I think I watched the screening on the big screen at Mami before that, and it was a lot to take in at one go on the big screen. I'm glad I did watch it like that, but it was very... I was glad that it was this Imtiaz Ali film that, you know, you got to watch on the screen. So, Ishita, just let's start with your feelings about the film and your overall sort of perspective.
So what Uday said, that I found it very intriguing that, you know, it obviously it started with the death and the fact that he crafted a biography like that, which automatically freed Imtiaz Ali from making a biopic the way we see it, which is which generally are like portraits of excess, you know, where you like keep like heaping praises on the central character. We have seen it across all the films, you know, in the past year or so. And here it becomes something very playful and inventive. I really like what he does with the genre, where there are multiple versions of Chamkila, and it's on the film almost plays out like the storied version of a story, you know, like how you would expect a legacy to unfold where no one really knows what happened. And the film basically captures that, which I found very fascinating. I found the design very inventive and fascinating.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the narrative framework for me was really the clincher about the film. As you know, as Ishita mentioned, I felt like taking the decision, first of all, to write a biopic from the perspective, basically crafting a life out of urban legends about the particular character, about Amar Singh Chamkila, which is what we've been hearing for three decades now. And it's always about various versions of him and the myths about him. And I love the fact that he took that as the narrative framework to start with his flashbacks from a former colleague and friend at a bar after his death. Then you move on to this night after his body and his wife's body is being stored, and a cop is being told the story by his by his colleagues and friends. So it's just everyone's version. It's all very, by design, it's subjective. And I love the fact, because I think like this is Imtiaz Ali's first biopic, and I always thought that Rockstar and Tamasha were very, like, were basically fictional versions of biopics. And I felt like he finally found that reason to do that kind of storytelling with this film and then treat a real life story like more or less fiction, which is what he did. And, you know, many people are being told stories here. Even the soundtrack does that, which we'll get to, of course. I thought that, you know, you're already winning in terms of your fundamental framework. And of course, Imtiaz Ali and Aarti Bajaj, and they combined to make this very electric and inventive narrative, multimedia, like sort of all sorts of things happening, which if you watch enough Imtiaz Ali films before 2015, used to do quite a lot. And I found that very, very attractive.
I think also there is this sense of, and I mean, his films have always been about storytelling and who gets to tell stories and how they tell it, and they take their time to tell stories. It was a big part of Tamasha, certainly. Out here, I think another element that gets added is that there are competing narratives and like competing narrations and narrators also. And and he sort of refers to it within his scenes itself. And it's very funny sometimes. There's one part where the three friends of Chamkila are talking to the cops, and they're sort of reminiscing, and the DSP tries to summarize things. And he says, she started singing with him, they became a hit, and they sang dirty songs, and then someone shot them. Mm. And the guy who's been talking up till then, the friend, he says no. And then he goes into an absolutely like pointless story about how their first show got canceled. It had no consequence at all in terms of importance to the thing. And then he said, yes, and now what you are saying happened. That they sang a lot of dirty songs, then they became a hit pair. What you were saying, it happened now. And that is simply, for me, I thought, I mean, in that moment, I just found it really funny because it's such a petty thing to do. But it's also a way of saying that I am telling the story. You have the power because you're a DSP and I am possibly going to be a suspect in his murder. But at this moment, in this film, which is built around, you know, us knowing about Chamkila, I have the power because I am telling this story. So I will take back that power from you, which I thought was very, very smart.
Rishita?
Yeah, I remember that scene. But yeah, I didn't read it the way Uday did. Also, like you said, like Rockstar and Tamasha, they are inherently, I think, they are about an artist. And in my head, I feel like Chamkila was like, it kind of completed the trilogy. Mm. In a way, I felt like they're all part of the same universe. And but also, I feel like both Rockstar and Tamasha, I mean, of course, Imtiaz Ali, expert in the house, Rahul Desai, might just come up with a different reading. But I found the portraits of the artist to be more interior looking, like it was more preoccupied with the person. But I feel like, you know, with the misunderstood person who is trying to fit in and who can't, and who is like angry with the world. And I feel like with Chamkila, even though it is about a person, I feel Imtiaz Ali turned the camera on us. Mm. You know, on the people who did not understand this artist, who did not let him fit in. Because even if the songs, which I'm sure will come to later, like the sonic vibe I felt was very similar to Rockstar. Even the words sometimes overlap, but you can totally understand that, you know, one is like, for example, Baja, which I love, which is basically about what everyone thought about him, you know, about Chamkila. And then you hear a song like Sadda Haq, which is basically this very, very angry artist saying that, you know, you can't listen, you can't accept the truth, then why are you forcing me to say it? So I felt like even though they are kind of companion pieces, but I feel in this case, he kind of put the camera on us, which I thought was very interesting for a biopic to do.
Yeah, it also went with, the person, I guess, that he was talking about, or like he made a film about, because... Yeah. Chamkila obviously lent himself to the audience, and his entire career was basically about him catering and pandering to what people want to hear or what he thinks people want to hear. He never really, made music for himself. So the fact that Imtiaz is making a film for him and, you know, Rehman's making a soundtrack for him, it went very well with that whole lack of interiority that you're talking about. Because he was so busy sort of lending himself to the people, that I don't think he got an opportunity to look within, in a sense. And it also went with Diljit's own character, you know, as a person also. We've seen many interviews of him. We've seen sort of him saying, you know, I had no struggle really, and I'm very uncomplicated, this is who I am. So I think that spirit of his married, like Chamkila's sort of Imtiaz Ali's vision of Chamkila, and it went very well with the slight distance between Chamkila and himself. And I think that's how the design of the film works so well, with including Rehman's, you know, amazing soundtrack, including HR's lyrics. And it just felt like they were finally sort of putting together fragments of, you know, Chamkila's life from various people, which is who he serviced all his life, so that they could sort of almost lend a tribute to him after, because he didn't have that opportunity to do so. And there's something about also telling a story which is posthumous, like unlike Rockstar or Tamasha, for instance, it always you're talking about people who are alive through the film. Here it's real, and secondly, it's posthumous. So you're almost eulogizing the person when you are recalling, you know, his career and his life. And I think, you know, that again went with the tone of the film, with the way the kind of music was being made. And it almost held the people accountable, the world accountable, for what happened to Chamkila and what his legacy turned out to be.
It's it's also less flattering than the films that you mentioned, in the sense that Tamasha and Rockstar, and I think in general Imtiaz Ali, tends to flatter the artist figure in his film, in the sense that there's a lot of sympathy. He's misunderstood. He's having such a tough time because he's an artist. The world doesn't understand him, etc., etc. And out here, it's quite, I mean, there's no false sympathy, in the sense that everything is earned, I think. And you can see that right at the start. They keep cutting back to the dead bodies of Chamkila and Amarjo through the thing. And it's not like accompanied with some sad music over it or something. It's just a plain fact shot. And they keep doing that through the film. And it's a very unsentimental kind of view of him and his art. And even he is very, like, throughout the film, Chamkila keeps reminding us that what he does because it sells. He's the one time that he moves away from that is when he gets one threat too many, and he starts making devotional music, and even that is a hit. But because he is so, he just can't help himself. In his live shows, people keep asking for his naughty songs, and he goes back to that. He just, there is this sense that, you know, he is incidentally maybe a great artist, but he is just, you know, trying to please his audience as much as possible. And I thought that was interesting, because it's not something I've seen from Imtiaz before. That tone, I thought, was slightly different. I should preface this by saying that I struggle with a lot of Imtiaz, so Rahul and I keep arguing about it. Ishita, I don't know where you stand on Imtiaz as a general.
Ishita is a new convert. Let's just make her.
No, I just want to say it is impossible to live with Rahul and not have extreme feelings about Imtiaz Ali.
Imtiaz Ali is like that guy who, you know, the dram sock guy with long hair who's in a corner of the canteen playing, you know, baby, it's a wild world on his guitar. He's like that guy to me.
So special. Oh, wow. I love it.
That's, that's very specific. It almost reminded me of Rockstar. But Ishita, let's talk about the music you've been obsessed with for the last week or so, and you've been listening to again and again. What's your reading of the Rehman soundtrack?
So just to circle back to what y'all were talking about, just the how the film has been designed, you know, as they said very rightly, that it's a very unflattering portrait of an artist, which Imtiaz generally doesn't do, which in my head, I thought, you know, it kind of ties up with something which is so, like, you know, universal, that, you know, an artist, the story of an artist is always... designed a biopic as one.
I think we lost you there, Ishita.
Ishita, your voice is going in and out. Just speak.
Oh, sorry. So I'm just saying that, you know what, like Uday said, that, you know, it's an unflattering portrait. And I felt like it kind of ties up with the larger reading, that a story or the story of an artist is, you know, it's just fated to be recollected or told as an obituary. And the fact that he designed a biopic as one, which I thought was very interesting. And the songs, I really am obsessed with the songs, because I feel like it just, you know, it just goes into the, like, if there's some, like, Rockstar and Chamkila's album, I feel they really play well together. And also the fact that the way they designed it, in the sense that, you know, it tells its own narrative. Even if you don't watch the film, if you just listen to the songs, you will know exactly what the film has done. And it's like, it's almost like the album is tied to the film, and also entirely independent of it. Where Irshad Kamil and Rehman, they are both like the, you know, the creators of this whole, their own film. And the fact that also I really like that, you know, even though the songs are mostly, they are stitching their legacy of Chamkila's legacy. The fact that, you know, the film gives the center stage to Chamkila at the end with a song like Vida Karo, where he's the only time in the film where he's basically gets a voice when he's talking to us. And, you know, when he's just like, you know, and the song, which is like basically, it's almost like a taunt, where he kind of takes the blame and he's asking to be left, you know, so that he can leave. And I think it's a very, it's a great coming full circle of the album for me.
Rahul, what did you make of Diljit and Pariniti Chopra, who plays Amarjot, doing their own singing and apparently doing it live during the shoot? What do you think that adds to the film?
I mean, first of all, it's impressive that, you know, they did it live. But the fact is, like, I wouldn't have been able to tell the difference as a viewer, because we're used to seeing a lot of musical biopics where there's just a lot of lip syncing going on. But of course, it adds to our, maybe it adds to the rawness, because the akhadas were a particular kind of language, a particular kind of performative art that not a lot of us were familiar with, especially, you know, down here. And I guess to see it like that, and to base a lot of it almost verbatim on the footage, as we do see footage being sort of like, you know, woven into the sequences that are being shot. I think that's, I was quite taken by that style of sort of comparing real life and, you know, like dramatization. And I thought Diljit was, I really like Diljit, because as mentioned earlier, I think he resists a lot of the excesses of this artist biopic that we've been talking about. And he resists basically Imtiaz's entire filmography because of the way he is. Because he looks so much like Ranbir Kapoor in so many scenes. He talks so much like him in a couple of scenes, especially where he's telling his Amarjot after she finds out that he's been married before and she's the second wife. The way he reacts is, there's so much of Ranbir in Tamasha or Ranbir in Rockstar in those sequences that you almost expect him to go off the handle any moment, but he never does. And a lot of it is, of course, because he's a real life character, but secondly, because I think it's just Diljit brings something slightly different to the table than, say, a fictional biopic like that. And I really liked how constrained his performance is, despite the fact that he's singing the most electric songs on stage, that too live most of the time. And he just seemed very much in sync with the setting. It helps that he himself is quite a massive Punjabi pop star. And I have mixed feelings about Pariniti. I can't say. I thought she was very functional. I thought she was trying too hard on stage to copy Amarjot. If you notice the way she was putting a pallu and sort of like always playing with a dupatta, while she was trying to look casual the way Amarjot did in a lot of her footage. But that casual was coming across as bored. And I think that was because she was concentrating too hard on imitating Amarjot rather than just sort of capturing a spirit like, say, Diljit did with Chamkila himself.
Maybe a bit too much of an imitation rather than her own interpretation of it. Yeah. I wasn't disappointed by her because, frankly, I've not had really much interest in whatever Pariniti's done for many years now. So it wasn't like she let down the film, but I don't think she added much to it. I don't know. Ishita, did you see anything in her performance that interested you?
There was just one moment I felt like there's a scene when she's coming down the stairs and she breaks into a dance, and the moment she sees Diljit, she has that straight face. where I felt like it was just like one moment which stood out, which leaped out, because otherwise I felt she played it too straight. And as Rahul also said, I felt that too, that it felt like a too studied performance. But I also wanted to ask y'all, since I think a lot of discourse around Chamkila, which is has been about the fact that the film has glossed over the fact that he was Dalit, or the specificity of the way he was killed. Did y'all feel that?
Well, it doesn't leave it out entirely. It doesn't center it for sure. But it's very clearly mentioned out there. He says his caste name. And he sort of says that even though I am Dalit, I will not go hungry. And it's quite a dramatic scene. So it's not like they're avoiding it altogether. I frankly do not know that much about the real Chamkila and whether he addressed this in his music. I would guess that it does not come up that much. But I don't know what are the criticisms exactly that they've sort of they've buried it.
Yeah, it has been glossed over. Like for instance, in real life, I think Amar Jodh was higher caste and he was lower caste, and that was a point of contention. And that has never been, mentioned in the film. So I think a lot of the criticism against Chamkila is what I was going through on social media, is that he did not take up, or there's only one mention of it where he says. But and
again,
after that,
though, I think that comes through fairly clearly. I even that part about it, that, that her family does look down on his. And I don't think that it's difficult to make that leap once we know his caste identity, that they might be thinking that. Again, that may have, I don't know if everyone is, if it comes across that clearly, but I thought it was clear.
I felt like the cast was definitely like, they didn't gloss over it at all. They first of all mentioned it once, but the cast was the subtext in this film, right? It was the subtext behind who he was as a person, as a performer especially. His servility towards the audiences, you could read a lot of cast into that. He kept saying that I'm a slave to my audiences, kept saying that I only want to make music that they want to hear. That's his version of saying that I want to be.
He starts off as a servant in the house of Jinda. At the start also.
And there is this subservience about him throughout the film. Even when he's defiant, there is subservience. Whenever he goes to, whenever someone new comes up and objects to his music, whether it is the militants, whether it is the police, whether it is the establishment or the people themselves, his first reaction is to listen to them and do what they tell him to. He cannot say no. And I think that servitude is the part of his caste. You don't have to be spoon-fed. You don't have to say he's chamar, and you don't have to say things this time and again and make this like the star-crossed love story just to feed the caste. But I think a lot of people who are criticizing it are missing on that subtext, are missing the fact that the design of his character, design of his film, the kind of artist he was, and the fact that he keeps repeating himself saying that I only want to make my audiences happy, give them what they want. That itself is the biggest snapshot of his cast in the film. And I felt like it was handled as well as possible.
Also, another thing which the film maybe doesn't address head on, but which is very much in the DNA of the film, is that decade in Punjab, a very tumultuous decade. Blue Star, the Khalistan movement, and all the militancy, and then all the killings. So it's interesting that it doesn't I don't think it says the word Khalistan at any point in the whole thing, and yet it sort of hangs over the film. It's just so clear, and fascinating use of Ishq Mitai. Which I when I heard it initially, I was like, interesting song, but I didn't quite get into it. And then I saw it in the film, and the background to that is you know, the anti-Sikh riots and protests, and but also, you know, art, people dancing, singing, and it's almost like the kind of collages that you do in college, like little cutouts and sort of not very polished, and it's sort of cut with this guy singing, and all these events are happening in the background, and it's absolutely fascinating. And then the song completely made sense at that point. And it's sort of like, it's almost like, you know, his art will burn it all down, and then, you know, something new will emerge. And I thought that was really, really, really smart work by Imtiaz Ali to talk about like a situation, you know, like a time in history, but to do it like in a very, very not like, you know, not like putting like something like Are Ruk Ja Re Bande, but doing something slightly, you know, almost the opposite mood of that, and capturing like all the tumult. I thought that was very smart.
Aishita?
Yeah, I remember that. And yeah, true. I felt the same. I mean, like he did not reduce any of it to a footnote. In his portrait of Chamkila, and all of them were very much the subtext. I felt the same about caste, and I felt the same about the Khalistan movement, because they don't, they never spell it aloud, actually. But so much of what happened to Chamkila was, and what we see happening to him, is tied to these two factors. And I like that there was no like the film did not change direction and become a different film altogether to basically be like a more pleasing film. So yeah
the and also the chorus of Ishq Mita is Main Hu Punjab, and you know, it really ends in that kind of fire, you know, very sada hakish, but not as Uday said, almost a contrast of what is actually happening in Punjab, and the fact that the film is trying to crystallize him as a manifestation of Punjab almost in the 80s is also a very smart thing to do, because you're also talking about various people giving their versions of him, the same way various groups are sort of various segments with various groups, various facets are basically infighting, and Punjab is almost on fire. So it's a very smart sort of connection, relationship between the protagonist and the place he's from. I think they become one at most points of time. And I think the soundtrack does such a fantastic job of portraying all these little metaphors and subtext without really, you know, throwing it in our face. And not a lot of soundtracks do that. And I'm glad I listened to a lot of the music first time while watching the film, because it gave me so much impetus to hear the soundtrack then independent of it. I can't seem to hear it before that and, you know, love it the same way. So yeah, that, and I also found, like, just coming back to one small thing about the narrative, I found it very interesting that they chose to base the entire story in the night following his death, right outside his bungalow, while his body and his wife's body are lying inside. And the storytelling is happening in the yard, and it's the dead of night. It's basically between midnight and morning. And it almost feels like they are quickly sort of telling the story of Chamkila before he becomes sort of the Chamkila that we know today, or the urban legend or the myth that he becomes. It's that very slender period of time between a person's life and his death, and that the narrative is trying to capture, saying this is when he's still alive but he's also dead. And I found it very like fascinating that they chose that one night. They didn't play with time so much. They didn't go that 10 years later someone is narrating a story because another pop maybe another musician is coming and facing the same. I love the immediacy of it. I love the urgency of it, and it makes so much sense, because when a public figure like that dies, it's the 12 hours that follow are probably the most fertile 12 hours in terms of the person's narrative. And I think Chamkila really won me over by sort of doing all its storytelling, all its gimmickry in that particular night.
Also, I think Ishita had mentioned early on Aarti Bajaj her work on that, but I think it can't be, you know, mentioned enough how important a role I feel that, you know, she must have had in how this film just the pace at which it comes out, the urgency, and like the, you know, the risks that it takes in terms of, like, you know, it could just look chaotic or it could look silly, but it somehow works. It's just it's weird. There'll be like split screens, there'll be like sometimes it goes into four, sometimes it goes into five. Sometimes there'll be like these really cheesy graphics, but then you realize, oh, you know, maybe they're trying to do it like the album covers looked in those days, because you'll see an album cover and you'll realize, oh, it's looking like this. And a lot of very, very interesting choices that, you know, as the film goes on, you realize that it's very deliberate. And I think just a very, very, very smart and I thought quite daring work, really, by Imtiaz. And Aarti Bajaj does just a phenomenal job on the edit of this film.
Ishita, a few words about Aarti Bajaj, our favorite.
Yours. Yeah, no, but it's true. It is true. Like, there is so much coherence she leads to, the incoherence of the whole jumping of timeline, and it just makes sense, because I think largely Imtiaz Ali's films, barring his last two, I think they just come at you with such full force that, you know, it just makes you feel like you have watched a better film than it is really. Like, yeah. The initial reaction is always that it's something very life altering, and I think a lot of this has to do with the way Aarti Bajaj has been his constant collaborator over the years.
I mean, yeah, I'll just say, like, I don't think Imtiaz Ali would be the Imtiaz Ali we know, or like the divisive Imtiaz Ali we know today, without Aarti Bajaj. I think, like, she almost deserves co-director credit on a couple of his previous films. Like, Tamasha and Rockstar, you can't narrate, you can't write those films. Like, if you look at how they have been designed and the sort of work that Aarti Bajaj has done on that, I think it's all really nicely culminated in this third film of the trilogy, as Ishita puts it. Where, you know, it just combines fact and fiction so seamlessly and so inventively, swinging for the fences but never really falling apart, that I don't think Imtiaz Ali could make a film like this without her. I don't think any of his films would have the kind of effect that they have had in the last 10 or 15 years without her. Is there anything else we'd like to add about Chamkila?
Just a couple of shout outs. I thought Anjum Batra was absolutely brilliant as Tikki, who is his earlier in his band, then becomes his manager, one of the narrators of his life story in Over That Night. And I thought absolutely scene stealing performance, really, really good.
Ishita?
Yeah, I think we have covered mostly.
I mean, Anjum Batra was terrific as Tikki. And I found it very fascinating that the storytelling started with Tikki drunk in a bar and saying, you know, I made him, let me tell you what he was. And Tikki features like so heavily in those portions. And as soon as his three or four colleagues later on start telling the cops a story, Tikki almost disappears from those. And like, you can see the fading influence of it. And I love that subjectivity, because, you know, in Tikki's eyes, he's pretty much the reason that Chamkila existed. And as soon as the others start telling the same story, there's hardly any Tikki. And I think that was the whole point of sort of maybe passing on the baton in terms of the storytelling. And, you know, fantastic performance by him. And I'm glad you that was a shout out. And Anurag Arora, very dependable, even though he's the cop here who's listening most of the film, he plays technically the audience also. He plays technically the different parts of Punjab that loved and hated Chamkila, because he goes from hate to from apathy to empathy by, you know, by the end of the film. And I thought one of the last scenes of the film had him and his son, where he tells his son that, you know, you can listen to him, it's fine, you no need to hide. I thought Anurag Arora has always been at the, you know, at the periphery of most of these films and shows, and I'm glad that they used his face as the listening face throughout the film. because he was basically standing in for most of us. I guess that's about it. You know, we can keep talking about this film for a long time because I think all three of us really like this film. It really worked for us, one of the better Hindi films we've seen in the last year or so. And and I'm glad it came from, first of all, Imtiaz Ali and secondly, Netflix, because, you know, I'm sure it must have been difficult to make a film like this, especially for Imtiaz to convince the powers that be. And I think he was very smart with his narrative and the way he addressed a lot of issues in Punjab in the 80s with his narrative. So it's a very fine line a lot of these filmmakers have to walk. And sometimes when they pull it off, I think it's probably worth mentioning because it can't be easy to make a film like this for either Netflix or Amazon or all these streaming platforms, given how paranoid they are after the controversies. So, that's about it with Amar Singh Chamkila and Maidan that we've discussed this week. We hope all of you watch the films, especially Chamkila. If you have, write into us with your opinions. I'm sure there'll be a lot of discourse about it. There are a lot of love and hate already on social media. So, and it's not often we get to talk about films we really like. So do write into us and thank you for listening. We'll hopefully be back soon. It's a action-packed next few weeks also. But we hope to be back soon and take care.